Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about opening our eyes to a new view of life. Thanks for joining us today. I'm so glad you joined us. It's been awesome to receive your feedback that these podcasts help you see and grow and gain energy from the messages we share. And if there were any message we'd want you to hear today, it's that you're filled with immense potential, that there's great value in you, in your future, and your efforts to improve. And I believe deeply you are where you are in life for a reason, for a purpose. And perhaps one purpose is to rise in your influence, leadership, and ability to live a happier life. So welcome. And when you're done listening to this podcast today, if you find some good ideas here, please be sure to share this podcast with a friend. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about several habits of wealthy people that you and I could adopt in our pursuit of wealth and happiness. You know, in my current role, I talk a lot with people who are wealthy. And it's easy after 4 years of lunches and discussions to start to see trends and commonalities among people who have, over their life thus far, become wealthy. And I thought it would be helpful to talk today about the common habits and behaviors of these people that's made them wealthy. And I'm excluding from my comments those that inherited wealth. And I'm focusing instead on those who created their wealth. And it may be useful to see what they do in their life in hopes that you and I can learn from them. And when it comes to wealthy people, I also combed the research that has been published on the topic, and there's been quite a bit. So I'll include insights from this research as well. My hope is that we can learn a few lessons. So let me ask you, if you know a wealthy person, what would you say are their habits or behaviors that have led them to wealth? I find it interesting that it's not all about being thrifty or saving money. In fact, some of the things wealthy people do to be wealthy may surprise you. Last year, Forbes magazine found 3,028 billionaires in the world. That means people whose net worth was more than $1 billion. This year was the first time that Bill Gates dropped out of the top 10. And last year's number one, Bernard Arnault, chairman of luxury goods brands like Louis Vuitton and Christian Dior, fell from number one to number five. The top 10 list includes Zuckerberg, founder of Meta, Ellison of Oracle, Page and Brin of Google, and Warren Buffett. This year, Elon Musk moved to the number one spot with a net worth of $342 billion. And while Musk is quite a controversial figure today and may even be strange in many ways, we can learn something from his experience. 20 years ago, Tesla was not the company you see today. It was still an experiment. Tesla was founded in 2003 and included Elon Musk as the fourth employee to join the team as co-founder and chairman of the board. Due to his vision and design of Tesla's first EV, the Roadster, Musk led the design of numerous components and early on proclaimed the goal of mass producing electric cars for everyone in the world. Musk started his career with his brother, working out of a tiny office designing software that gave street-by-street directions to people who were traveling. He made $22 million when he sold that software. Then he developed and sold PayPal. He sold it to eBay for $1.5 billion. His share of that sale was $180 million profit, and he bet it all on Tesla and SpaceX. Now, people think that everything came easy to Musk, that he was entitled to his success. Not so. In 2008, Musk took over as CEO of the company to oversee the official launch of the electric Roadster. And while to many it seemed Tesla was on track, things were actually rather dire behind closed doors. Musk had just lost a lawsuit with Fisker. Also, the Tesla cars being produced had massive quality problems, and they were only actually selling a small percentage of the cars being produced because the cars weren't operating correctly. The plant was filled with finished cars that were inoperable. Also, in 2008, SpaceX had three launch failures, and it was projected if the next flight was a failure, SpaceX would not survive. While Musk had made millions on his sale of PayPal, he had poured everything he had into Tesla and SpaceX. So, On Christmas Day 2008, Tesla was facing bankruptcy. Without additional funding, he was unlikely to keep the doors open. And if you think about it, 2008 was at the height of the recession, and few banks or lenders were helping American automakers. In fact, the U.S. government stepped in to help some automakers survive. Musk put every penny he had into avoiding bankruptcy. He even had to borrow money from his friends just to pay his rent. Luckily, the fourth flight of SpaceX was successful. And finally, on Christmas at 6 p.m., Musk got word that NASA granted SpaceX a very large contract, and Tesla funding from an investor promised months earlier was finally secured. Most people think that great brands like Tesla just appeared, but not so. And by the way, as of this year, Tesla sits as the most valuable automaker in the world. What strikes me the most about Musk's story is that when he sold PayPal and received $180 million, he could have said, "I finally made it." He could have stepped back and relaxed and relived his glory days. But instead, he took on two impossible projects: creating an electric car company from the ground up when electric cars were not popular or common, and started a spaceship company. But he had courage to try, and he didn't wait. He moved. He acted deliberately and with urgency. We see this in almost every story of wealthy people who earned, not inherited, their wealth. They didn't wait. They saw an opportunity and moved with urgency. Musk likely saw or hoped that EV cars would be coming into fashion in future years. He maybe could see that the business of putting satellites into space was extremely profitable. As of today, there are 11,700 known satellites orbiting Earth. More than 80% were put there by SpaceX. Some are military, some are their own. In fact, Starlink, SpaceX's business of communications, provides mobile and other communications to 130 countries around the world using those satellites. Now, I've seen a lot of business owners over the years achieve a level of performance where their basic living needs are met, and then they pause in their work and maybe they're dreaming. And there's nothing wrong with this. That's why you work hard, right? But the strange thing is that many of these same people aren't happy. They want ongoing results, but they don't continue to act with urgency like they did earlier. And they start to spend time on more unimportant things. As I looked at the research of commonalities among wealthy people, this urgency bias was common. These people do things now. They have a habit of moving quickly when needed. You know, years ago, when I learned about urgency bias, it fascinated me, and I started learning all I could. After that, I adopted a time management system I learned from my studies, and here's how it works. When something needs to be done that is important, do it now. And the result of this is that your workload doesn't pile up because everything's already done. The things to be done are already done, thereby allowing you capacity to do almost everything now. In building your business, you need to work your contact lists and reach out to people. Do it today. Do it every day, early, with enthusiasm. Then your contact list stays full and you can nurture leads and seek new customers. Nothing is worse than saying you will do it tomorrow, and soon the tomorrows pile up until the energy needed to change your habits is too large to move anything. People used to ask me how I managed my time so effectively. My answer to them was, I do it now. Think you should call your kids? Call now. Have the thought that you should tell your spouse you love them? Do it now. Thinking of sending a text expressing gratitude? Do it now. If you don't, the inspiration will pass and you'll miss the chance. Wealthy people have an urgency bias. In fact, in many cases, they'll spend extra money to get things done earlier. This surprised me. In making choices of what partners they selected or vendors they chose to do business with, they often chose more expensive partners who were faster and more competent. Doing things promptly took precedence over price. Why? Because time is, in fact, money. And the sooner you can begin, the more you can earn or do later. In your business, sometimes you're looking for partners. Some of you look for people who need the money. Not always the right choice. In fact, busy people People who do things now may in fact be the right choice because they will simply do what needs to be done when people who need it may need it because they're in the habit of waiting. Ingvar Kamrad was born in 1926 in Sweden. His mother was Swedish and his father German. As a young boy, he started selling matches. He realized that he could buy them in bulk, mark them up a little, and sell them individually at a profit. He would ride his bike around his town selling his goods. Soon, he expanded to fish, decorations, seeds, and many other items. So when he was 17, he founded a company to house his efforts. He called the company IKEA. The IK stood for his name, Ingvar Kamprad, and the E for the name of his hometown, and the A for a village near his hometown. Soon, he added furniture and started to learn how to make the furniture business work. And well ahead of his time, he sold his furniture through mail order. And over the years, his company grew to be the largest furniture manufacturer and distributor in the world with almost $40 billion in sales. The fact that IKEA is in every major country gives them an advantage in terms of buying power. Because their products all come in boxes, they can make those products in one country very economically and ship them all over the world less expensively, something that other furniture manufacturers can't do, and this makes the furniture less expensive. The makeup of the stores allows IKEA to fulfill orders immediately, allowing customers to take their furniture with them, increasing their level of satisfaction. The store design creates an imaginative tone in the shopper's mind. This also increases the amount sold to each customer. IKEA's advantage is that it would be extremely difficult for another furniture company to replicate or compete against them. Ingvar is one of the top 100 wealthiest people in the world. And according to a 2006 interview, he was then driving a 1993 Volvo, flew economy class, and encouraged IKEA employees to use both sides of the page when writing or printing. Instead of indulging in luxury, he reinvested in his company. Here's the point. Ingvar, like other wealthy people, build on what they learn. He learned from selling matches that he could do the same with other goods. And then he expanded to furniture. And then he learned the competitive advantages that would allow IKEA to grow beyond what other furniture companies do. Wealthy people are always learning. Books, seminars, courses. Wealthy people spend on education, and not just the formal kind. They invest in learning because they understand something essential, that your mind is your greatest asset. Wealthy people see learning not as a stage of life, but a lifelong habit. Again, they read, seek mentors, and expose themselves to new ideas constantly. The more you know and learn, the more ideas and skill you find. Now, you and I may not think that investing in learning will yield an ROI, but wealthy people do it all the time. I know one wealthy person in my neighborhood, and he's constantly networking, asking questions, going to seminars, learning and reading. He spends, he told me, about 10 hours a week on doing learning activities. So if you're building a business, how much time do you spend on learning about people, business, your products, how to connect, training, and other things to help you become better? Wealthy people also are willing to take some risks because of what they learn. Whether the risk pays off or not, they gain learning. You see, some lessons have to be experienced before they can be learned. The company Berkshire Hathaway was founded more than a century ago as a textile manufacturer. However, in 1965, it made a mindset change, mostly led by CEO Warren Buffett. The company's main business became insurance. And what you do with insurance is retain much of the premiums paid by customers and invest that money until the day you need it to pay out for claims. Well, what Buffett did was invest those assets in stocks and other securities. He looks for value. In other words, he buys the stock or company that is undervalued. The market, for some reason, believes the stock will perform worse than what Buffett believes it will perform. In simple terms, he buys at a discount. He doesn't look for the home run, but rather a discounted price so he can make his expected return. Well, Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway compared to the 9.9% return from the S&P 500, have earned a 19.8% return during the same period. And as a result, the stock of Berkshire Hathaway itself has attracted hundreds of thousands of investors who are trying to capitalize on or copy Warren Buffett's system. Warren Buffett himself is estimated to be worth $120 billion. And almost everyone who knows him says that the major difference between him and everyone else is his mindset. He doesn't care about whether the stock market as a whole goes up or down. He's concerned whether the company he has purchased will improve and make money or not. And this mindset has yielded exceptional results. Much of Buffett's early childhood years were filled with entrepreneurial ventures. One of his first business ventures, he sold chewing gum and weekly magazines door to door. Then he worked in his grandfather's grocery store. While still in high school, he delivered newspapers, sold golf balls and stamps, and detailed cars. On his first income tax return, he took a $35 deduction for use of his bicycle on his paper route. As a high school sophomore, Buffett and a friend spent $25 to purchase a used pinball machine, which they placed at the local barber. Within months, they owned several, and they placed them in barbershops across Omaha. They later sold the business for a tidy sum of $1,200. Through his hard work, he graduated from college with a large amount of money in his savings account. He then went to work investing and working, sometimes multiple jobs at a time. And 10 years after graduating from college, he was a millionaire and purchased a 5-bedroom stucco house in Omaha for $31,000, where he lived most of his life. Buffett says of investing in people, "Investing may seem easy to do when one looks through an always clean rear view mirror. Unfortunately, however, it's the windshield through which investors must peer, and that glass is invariably foggy." And Buffett's right. In the foggy uncertainty of the market, Buffett's mindset has served him well. And that's the way it is with mindsets. In the chaos of everyday life and decisions and comings and goings, your mindset can direct and give you an advantage. This is another lesson from wealthy people. They have a mindset gained from learning lessons over time. Buffett started with furniture and realized that insurance was more lucrative, which led him to investing, which created his wealth. But in that process, he realized you don't chase fads as an investor. Decide on your strategy and stay with it. Perfect it. Now, perhaps you are building a business or raising a family or working a full-time job. Have you learned and created your winning strategy? Research shows that wealthy people have a stubborn, relentless commitment to their winning strategy. Not long ago, the U.S. Open tennis tournament concluded, and one of the participants was Emma Navarro. She's an up-and-coming tennis star. Her father, Ben Navarro, is one of the 3,000 billionaires in the world. His father was a football coach, and he attended the University of Rhode Island. While he was in college, he developed a student VIP card, which he sold to local businesses. This led him to the credit card business. He learned all he could while working his first job at Chemical Bank. He saved his money while working for Goldman Sachs and Citigroup. Then he left and founded his own banking company, Sherman Financial Group. Years later, that group would buy a small bank and rename it Credit One Bank. This was a huge step and full of risk, but Credit One Bank is now one of the largest holders of consumer debt and credit cards in the country. But Navarro stuck with his first strategy, a VIP card and credit cards. Here's my point. The best guess is that you already know what you're good at. Perhaps you need to throw yourself wholeheartedly into that thing. Wealthy people often become wealthy because they relentlessly pursue that which they know best. They let their creativity flow inside of their known talents. Perhaps in your business, it's time to double down on your investment of time and effort in what you do well. Get committed by exploring new and better ways to find customers. Feel the joy that comes from using your talents fully. Give yourself to that thing for a committed period of time. And watch, you will likely prosper more than you would otherwise. You know, in the research of wealthy people, I learned something important. The happiest wealthy people had done something I didn't expect. The research said they didn't equate spending with worth, that they were able to see that worth is not found in money or possessions. But these wealthy people admired those others who worked hard, who were creative, and who were striving. It's funny, once atop the financial ladder, these people realized that happiness wasn't found there, but rather that worth in people was created by something entirely different. Chuck Feeney was born in the 1930s during the Great Depression. He served in the Air Force during the Korean War, and it was there that he started selling to servicemen who were returning home from the war. When he went to college, the concept of selling duty-free goods to travelers and helping them avoid import taxes was just in its infancy, and Chuck and his classmates started a business selling goods to returning servicemen. Well, after graduation, he founded Duty Free Shoppers, or DFS. They had huge profit margins because DFS, like most other retailers in Asia, took a far higher markup on Western luxury items than was the case in Europe and in the US. In New York, a retailer might price a designer handbag at 2 times the wholesale price. But in Asia, the retail price was a standard 3 times the wholesale price. So when he sold duty-free in Asia, he made a huge markup. And over the years, he grew the business many times over. And in 1996, he sold the company to Louis Vuitton. It was then that he realized that wealth was not intended to give a person worth. But what you did with that wealth makes your worth increase. Unknown to anyone, he secretly transferred his entire stake in DFS to a foundation. The foundation's goal was to give everything to the needy while Chuck was alive. By 2020, his foundation closed after giving away more than $8 billion, his entire estate. During this time, he shunned publicity. He lived modestly. He wore a $10 Casio watch and rented an apartment in San Francisco. When he died at the age of 92 in 2023, he had less than $2 million of assets to his name. He famously said, "I want the last check I write to bounce." He also said, "People used to ask me how I got my jollies. And I guess I'm happy when what I'm doing is helping people and unhappy when what I'm doing isn't helping people." The next thing I learned from wealthy people is this: they obsess over time, not money. You will see them spending for time, hiring a cleaner or someone to mow the lawn. And I used to think this was someone being spoiled. But in the case of smart, wealthy people, they understand that time is their most limited resource. Now, this shift in mindset could help you and me understand that time is valuable. So rest properly so you can make the best use of your time each day. Make the most of your leisure hours. Nowadays, I want to spend my leisure time with grandkids and other people where I can develop relationships or teach a skill like teaching my granddaughter to play the piano. I often ask myself, why did I wait so many years to make time the priority in my life? The truth is, you can always make money, but you can't always make more time. You know, the youngest female billionaire on Forbes' list of billionaires is Lucy Guo. Born in Fremont, California, to Chinese immigrant parents, as a teenager, she taught herself computer programming and earned money developing bots for the online game Neopets. By the way, are you seeing a trend here? Many billionaires started their work as teenagers. I wonder, as parents, if we shouldn't reevaluate the benefits of having our kids in so many sports versus helping them develop an entrepreneurial mindset. Anyway, Lucy was chosen for a grant that gave young people money to pursue entrepreneurial projects. So she dropped out of college and joined Snapchat as the company's first female designer. There, she developed Snap Maps, then moved to Quora, and she co-founded Scale AI. She launched another company called Backend Capital, but her billions came from the sale of Scale AI. And with it, she passed Taylor Swift as the youngest female billionaire. An average day for Guo includes waking up at 5:30, going to the gym for 2 workout sessions back-to-back. Lunches are a luxury for the startup founder, and she often eats during meetings as her schedule doesn't always allow for a break. She says, "I think most people could have work-life balance if they cut out where they waste their time, like when they get back home, where they scroll on TikTok or just sit and watch TV mindlessly. Here's what I learned from her and other billionaires. Their daily routine is rather rigid. They exercise. They understand that a sharp mind requires a healthy body. They organize their time. They relax, but not to excess. And they love what they do. And I wonder if you and I have the daily routine that is disciplined in consistent exercise and making better use of our time. Well, after reading her story, I've reevaluated my daily routine and sharpened a few of the areas that need sharpening. It's amazing how much better I feel when I stick to that routine. Here's the next thing that seems to be common among billionaires. They pay for expertise without hesitation. They hire a financial advisor or tax strategist. They listen. They seek understanding. They use performance coaches. They aren't afraid to admit that they don't know something. They understand that getting to where you want to go faster means learning from people who are expert at what you're trying to do. Now, perhaps many of us who are building a business are too embarrassed to seek expertise or proud to copy someone else's way of doing things. Or maybe we're too comfortable to try what others know. Whatever the reason, I think we could learn a lot from those who have used learning to earn a lot. The habits of wealthy individuals are not built on secret formulas or mere good fortune. They are shaped by consistency, learning, networking, frugality, resilience, and contribution. Anyone can begin practicing these habits today. While results may not be immediate, the compounding effect of such habits can redefine both financial outcomes and life satisfaction. Well, as we end today, I hope that this has been helpful and given you a suggestion or two as to how to improve your business or life. Wealth is in ideas, knowledge, family and friends, and not just money. But there is great good that we can do and learn from those who have traveled the road before us. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode of Open Your Eyes as we seek to see our true potential of who and what we can become.